Thus, from our ability to love, because envy's love is devoted only to the bittering of oneself because of what one doesn't have, eventually leading us into our own individual exile. Contentment, alternatively, is a form of gratitude and appreciation. If envy is a feeling, is feeling bitter about what one doesn't have and blaming God for it, then contentment is appreciating what one does have and thanking God for it. So when I was looking into it, for me, I see people using envy and jealousy very synonyms. But I think here we don't want to do that, just because when you look at the Bible, envy is one of the seven deadly sins, and you talk about God as a jealous God. So how could that be compatible? So I will give the definitions of what I have actually seen. So jealousy is about something that is actually rightfully yours. So when you talk about God and his commandment to not worship any other gods and stay away from idolatry, it's because that worship is rightfully his, so he is allowed to be a jealous God. Whereas if you're coveting someone's wife or partner, that partner is not rightfully yours, and you're looking to have something that is not yours. Just putting that up. So now, I'll let my mom come and talk a little more about envy.
So, that was sort of clarified because as you probably hear or read envy and jealousy as often intertwined, but for this purpose, we stuck to envy alone. So, when I read the passages in the lectionary given for this morning's topic, two things struck me. One, that envy begins and is evidenced right at the beginning of the Bible. Once sin enters the earth, envy is right there, and we see this with the stories that we read. And secondly, that the passages were about family and the feeling between the two brothers, Cain and Abel. And this, and we have many more examples of this in the Bible as well. You look at Jacob and Esau, the envy between them, and what happens. Joseph and his brothers. So this envy and jealousy, the envy that existed between them, drove them to acts that resulted in death, loss of a birthright, and selling of a sibling. So this envy, this sin, leads to behaviors that are deeply embedded in our nature. When we look back on our own childhood or the raising of our children, how soon and how often did we see actions by our children that were the result of envy? Babies from the time of three, supposedly, are supposed to feel envy. So this begins very, very early. Last week, we were driving around, and on the NPR radio hour, there just happened to be a discussion of the seven deadly sins. So, as an aside, when Guy Raz introduced the seven deadly sins, he said that they're often, or there is this theory, that they're reflected in many shows. And he looked at Gilligan's Island, for those of you who remember. So in that show, Gilligan was representative of sloth, the skipper, wrath, Ginger, lust, Marianne, envy, she was second fiddle to Ginger, the professor, pride, Kirsten Howell III was greed, and the wife was gluttony. So I thought that was interesting, and he went on to say that Winnie the Pooh, there are many examples that could be used, many shows and stories to represent these seven deadly sins throughout. So you may want to think of that the next time you read these stories or see these shows. So Guy Raz then went on to talk about envy. He discussed each of these seven deadly sins in a 5 or 10 minute segment, and he talked to someone named Perula Segal about envy. She talked about how actually envy helps us better understand ourselves. I don't think that many of us have thought about envy in sort of this positive way, but it's sometimes good to look at it as well. You know, we think of the sin, but what else can envy lead us to? She felt that envy might be the catalyst for improvement and change. There's a fine line between envy and rivalry. You could argue that envy can make you better at what you can do. It might be a catalyst when you realize you resent someone because you actually value something that they have so much that you perform better and do things differently. At the same time, envy can also have a more positive consequences. It can motivate people to improve their own position. And this is some research that's been done on that and shows what happens when people feel envy. So that's maybe the more positive side of envy. Darwin says that envy is a survival mechanism, that we may want to have access to our loved ones, the first people in our affections. So when you look back at babies and children, maybe there is a reason that they feel envy, that they want this access to their loved one, and in fact, that's something that's important for human survival and human behavior. So feeling this need for love and being a bit jealous or being envious when another sibling has it. So there's some kind of a survival instinct in there. However, I think for the most part, envy doesn't lead to positive outcomes. According to some theories, Kaiser Wilhelm II really was responsible for World War II, indirectly. He envied his cousin, who had built up a large British fleet, and it began a massive buildup in an arms race at that time. So I'm not going to go into the details of what happened and look at the different arguments, but the consequences of World War I were huge. A lot of deaths occurred, and maybe without this envy on the part of the Kaiser, we wouldn't have seen the whole First World War. Who knows? But the consequences are huge. So a few more examples of envy or cases. I looked at it, and I call it envy amongst loved ones. So the Bible passages we read were clear examples of envy among siblings. The result was murder of one of the brothers and God banishing Cain from the garden. I mean, that was huge. He said, I can't bear that punishment. And so it was large. We think of envy amongst couples and this can also lead to death, right? A lot of murders occur between couples because of this feeling of envy. It can tear families apart. I know several cases where this envy of one sibling over another has come out when the parent dies and you see the settling of estates. And I think maybe it's a feeling that's carried over from when they were younger and one felt more loved than the other. And I think that... So this has occurred. I think that the fact that so much fiction uses envy or jealousy as its premise is due to the fact that it's so prevalent in our daily lives. And when we think of fiction, you can think of some of the great stories. I mean, where would Shakespeare be without that kind of envy? Gatsby, Madame Bovary, all were engineered. All these stories are engineered by envy. So our literature teachers would have little to talk about if it wasn't for this foundational sin that occurs in our lives. Another type of envy I call the envy of the younger. It's my birthday today, and I'm creeping closer to what would traditionally be called retirement age. And I think, I think I'm not alone in this, have a difficult time accepting or being content with my age. I think this wanting to be younger and envying youth is pervasive in our culture. I've noticed that when I reached my later 50s, people assume that you're a bit out of touch, and you probably are a bit, but it results into a reaction that you want to be younger. You want to be with it. You want to be shown that you're still relevant. In addition, we have our beauty culture. No wrinkles, no tummy, a full head of hair, all of these things that can make us happier. I know I exaggerate a bit, but I do think it gets to us, and we start envying those that are younger and not being satisfied with who we are. So we end up striving for something that others have or appear to have. In other words, we're not content with what or where God has placed us in our lives right now. Nicole's going to talk a little bit more about the role of social media and envy, But before she does, I think that there are a couple of things we can think about when we control our envy. I think we have to recognize which and when our behaviors are driven by envy or jealousy. Maybe it's weighing the consequences of our actions and saying, is it worth it? Like, how can we control that? Because if we don't, what's going to happen? Is it going to mean that we'll be separated from our family? And years from now, when we're looking for support, we won't have it. So just being aware that these behaviors that I'm having or these feelings are driven by envy. Something else that I heard was that envy leads to stories, and it's true. When we envy someone, we start to make up our stories. We start to make up stories to feed that envy. She leads such a great life. I know this because I saw her pictures on Instagram. She always has friends over, and her place is so beautiful. And we go on building up on this other person and their life and how grand it is and feeling like, oh, if I only could have that. Part of it's based on our perceptions and little bits of information. It's not really always reality. Just recently, I came back from Japan, and I was there for 21 days and out of Korea. So I was there for 21 days. And when I came back, I posted a few things on Instagram and on Facebook. And everybody said, oh, it looks like you had a great time. Well, those pictures were from 2 days of the time that I was gone. The other 19 days I was in a classroom or out with the group, and I didn't post those pictures of when I was working. So we need to have, these stories are just based on a bit of information or a perception, and we need to have control over the stories that we start building up in our minds. So that's what I think in terms of looking at envy and just realizing that it's out there. So be aware that these are feelings that we all have.
So let's talk about social media. And I do recognize that maybe a lot of you aren't on any social media, and what I will say is going to go right past your head because you will not understand, but I will do the best I can to really share what I think a lot of the millennial generation goes through, but also I'm sure some of you do have some social media, so maybe you can relate a little bit. So when I think of social media, or when I'm going to talk about social media, I'm talking about things such as Facebook, Snapchat, Tumblr, LinkedIn, and mostly Instagram. And this social media has really, I think, infiltrated our life and consumes a lot of our thoughts and our energy. Instagram, for example, has over 1 billion users monthly, and of that, 500 million use that daily. On average, an average user uses it for about 30 minutes a day. So obviously, I went to go check, and I am right on the average of 30 minutes a day as well. I want to read something that Robert Greene wrote in The Laws of Human Nature about social media that I think gives a good image of how it is used today, especially Instagram. Through social media, we have a continual window into the lives of friends, pseudo-friends, and celebrities. And what we see is not some unvarnished peek into their world, but a highly idealized image that they present. We see only the most exciting images from their vacations, their happy faces of their friends and children, accounts of their continual self-improvement, the fascinating people they are meeting, the great causes and projects they are involved in, the example of success in their endeavors. And like my mom said, she posted pictures of 2 days, but that really wasn't representative of her whole trip. And maybe because she thought no one would want to see the other days, but it's not a representation of her life. Yet we come and we look at that and maybe we're envious. Why don't we get to do these trips all the time? In today's world, Instagram just gives you a picture, a window, as he said, into the lives of your friends. But also, nowadays, you have something called Instagram influencers. And you can also follow celebrities. Whereas before, You would see your celebrities in magazines and maybe advertisements on TV. It's very impersonal. You don't feel like you have a connection. But it's different now because if you wanted to, you could send a message to the celebrity and every so often they'll reply to you. These Instagram influencers are people from every day who somehow gain a following of thousands, if not millions of people. And unfortunately, a lot of these people, as I say, influencers, is to make you want to be like them. And they sell you products. Advertising companies will give these people whatever stuff, whether it's sugar bear hair candy for better hair, or liquid IV so you can hydrate yourself after a night out, anything. But they put that on so that you envy them, that you want to be like them. And because it's on Instagram, it feels so much more personal. But that's not real life. And when it starts sinking into the people who are truly close to you, when you start looking like that with your friends, envy starts playing a dangerous role. I was talking to one of my friends this week, and she wrote to me just being like, I don't want to go out to the beach. Like, I don't feel like I have the right body type. I thought that was crazy. But she was saying, everything I see on social media isn't me. I don't feel comfortable with this. And although before it might have been looking at celebrities on the beach in your magazine, because they feel so far away, it didn't really affect you as much, although it did. But now with social media, it's a lot more, and you become envious, and that's a dangerous path. So, Instagram's not going anywhere, let's be honest. It's now where people have a lot of jobs. People like to peruse Instagram and see what their friends are doing. Couple of times in the past few months, Instagram has completely shut down and was non-functional. And there was mad chaos, and people were not happy about this. And that's not what happens if something's about to disappear. So within living in this world, what do we do about it? How do we find contentment in that? And that will be the second part of our discussion. Okay, so we'll move on to our prayer of confession, which I will read.